Thank you for the lovely music. It's great to see you again. So, good morning, everyone. I'm Joseph Santos-Lyons, and I appreciate the opportunity to be with you this morning. This is my final farewell to an American congregation before I move overseas to Quezon City in the Philippines to reunite with my family. And thank you to Jocelyn for the invitation. We've had a chance to work together off and on for 15, almost 20 years now, which is great. I have no doubt that each of you are as troubled by this current political moment as I am. And as I was reflecting on what to share with you this morning and how to help make some sense of what is happening, I took some time to think about the history of social movements, the resistance to tyranny and oppression, and I wanted to think globally to put my own local work in some perspective. I spoke with Amy, my wife and partner in life, who works with feminists in the Global South. She's already in the Philippines now. And she shared this story of the Kurdish women who are organizing in northern Syria. For generations, the Kurdish people have faced oppression and genocide from the Ottoman Empire to today's Syrian civil war. And in this particular region, she lifted up the feminist resistance that is trying to counter the violent fundamentalism and the strict subservience to men. Azia Abdullah is a 46-year-old teacher and human rights activist who became the first democratically elected female leader in what is known as the Rojava Experiment. She speaks out about the suffering that women and children experience in all wars and the right-wing forces that are attacking their communities who seek to reduce women to slaves and body parts. Amidst this chaos of war and human atrocity, she has been part of a coalition bringing together local Assyrian, Arab, and Kurdish peoples to create a small autonomous society that is based on the principles of communal economy, harmony with the environment, and self-governance. She shared this quote, "Our first responsibility is to protect our sisters, to protect all women, and that is why our revolution is working. Why Arab women and Yazidi women join when they see us. You can't have real change without putting women at the center." Their motto, loosely translated, is struggle is life. They've created women's fighting units called the YPJ, where Kurdish women literally fight for their rights in an area where women's rights are often repressed. They're taking on Assad's army, Turkish-based paramilitary forces, and ISIS. At the same time, leaders like Azia have made women's emancipation central in the creation of their new society. They've banned underage marriage, made sure there is equal representation amongst women and ethnic groups, and women also have equal standing in property law. The Rojava Constitution holds that gender equality and religious freedom are crucial rights for all. Their highest hope is to be recognized as a stateless democracy, a semi-autonomous region within a federalized Syria. So I share this story because there are several themes that resonate with my experience and learnings as an organizer and community minister. To center those that are most impacted in leadership, to hold strong values, and to take actions based on your context. I'm also reminded that struggle is like power. It is a capacity that is neither good nor evil, yet can be used for good or evil. And something I, for one, believe we should be building and generating more with intention and a sense of morality. I can't help but acknowledge all the recent assaults on my sense of who we are and who we hope to be as a society. The news and lived experiences have been bitter and horrifying, and I feel these words from our reading that the crimes of our age, the grotesque inhumanities of greed, the sheer and astounding shamelessness of it, the vast fortunes made by stealing lives, the horrible normalcy with which it came to have, needs to be unimaginable to our heirs and the generations of the free. We've learned the separation of over 2,000 children by ICE, and Oregon's own role in detaining asylum seekers who have been isolated from their families and have not had the proper legal services or language interpretation. The U.S. Supreme Court is rolling back workers' rights and LGBTQ equality, and the retirement of Justice Anthony Kennedy has created a real sense that we are facing real threats to reproductive health, racial and gender justice. Rebecca Solnit, who writes regularly for Harper's Magazine, made the most sense to me with her Facebook post this week. She said, "Sometimes I think that the Trump regime is going at it so furiously because they know that their time to destroy is limited. Though I don't know how limited, and neither do they, it will not last forever. Something will come next, which does not mean that everything will be okay, because so many refugee babies and children and institutions and everything in between have been harmed already, and some people have already died of despair in this phase of our history. What comes next, nobody knows, in large part because it's up to us, because civil society is the great counterforce to tyranny, because more and more people are getting ready for they know not what. So in these moments when I am feeling helpless and confused, I find myself practicing imagining, putting myself in a place and a space to be dreaming and wondering about what another world would look like, really look like and feel like and taste like. What would it take not to have that pit in my stomach, that creeping sense of indifference, that metallic taste of dread? Listening and praying with other people, especially those who are on the front lines experiencing unemployment and underemployment, homelessness and discrimination, what are they calling for? And then finding ways to internalize what I'm hearing and learning through art and song and music. Taking all that in and taking a deep breath, and then finding a new commitment and recommitments to myself and the belief that another world is possible. My imagination practice shifts from a process of reflection into an agenda for action. And by action, I mean a series of honest and imperfect attempts to do something right and true by what I believe. And like my favorite sport of baseball, I often ground out and fly out and strike out more than I get on base and find my way home. I've been on a path that has been inspired by our faith as a youth into a relational and transformative community organizing role that guided my way back into the UUA in seminary 20 years ago. As a biracial Chinese and white young adult, I struggled with my sense of place and found myself seeking purpose in community with other young people of color. And as I worked for our church for about a decade, I felt such pride in co-creating community and worship and music and social change together. But I also came to a point where I made a conscientious decision to seek out opportunities to work as intentionally as possible with other communities of color. And I was clear that there really weren't options within American churches to work in a culturally specific setting. The ministers of color I had met and been mentored by shared their stories of struggle working within our predominantly white faith. And after my training as a minister, training that would better prepare me to live out my values, I said farewell to the UUA after 10 years of youth and young adult ministry, and yes to opportunities like Apano to apply the best of what I had learned in our faith into a community setting. So for some background on Apano, I wanted to share just a few facts and figures. When I started in 2008, there were about 150,000 Asian Pacific Islanders in Oregon. Today, there's over 250,000. And 25% of Oregonians identify as people of color in the most recent census. The banner of Asian and Pacific Islanders is a very complex and diverse set of distinct ethnic and cultural groups with their own unique histories and languages and experiences of immigration and colonialism. For me, one of the most notable features of our communities, our Asian Pacific Islander communities, is that we have very few features. Visitors often remark how little they see of our communities in the built environment, and long-timers regularly share stories of how they feel isolated and invisible. We are historically underrepresented in virtually every sector of society, with a few organizations and a couple of buildings. And while we have a presence in small businesses and amongst some professional classes, we are generally absent from political life and do not have the same kind of visible and vibrant neighborhoods that you might know, like San Francisco's Chinatown or Seattle's International District. These places that have really sustained a legacy of cultural resources. We do, however, have a remarkable and often regrettable periods of history that are often experienced by Chinese, Indian, and Japanese American communities. Things like internment, racism, and xenophobia. So Apano had been primarily a volunteer-led network in Multnomah County when I started 10 years ago. And today we're about 8,000 supporters across the state with 20 staff. We've gone from being able to dedicate our resources to shape and lead one major issue a year and handling as much crisis response as we can, to really stepping into leading higher stakes policy campaigns, working to elect progressive people to office, and working much more in solidarity with LGBTQ and communities of color to really shift culture and the balance of power. So actually Friday was my last day at Apano, and I'm still a little hungover from the 10 years of working as executive director, and I'm really gonna miss the work and the people. It has been such an overall joy. Just last week, as I was saying farewell to folks, I saw youth leaders coming back from an organizing retreat at the coast. Our cultural work volunteers were preparing for the next Mic Check Performing Arts Series. Our capital campaign team was drawing up plans for a summer neighborhood tour, and our political team was hosting a town hall in Hillsborough. And walking out of our offices in the Wing Ming Plaza on 82nd Avenue, I'm only now really starting to feel the departure. But what I do feel is a lot of joy in seeing people working together side by side with a deep care for one another, an optimism and belief that another world is possible. And I appreciate the opportunity to share a couple of last stories with you, sort of my initial reflections after hanging up my sort of keys on Friday. So Phyllis Lee is a Chinese elder and a co-founder of Apano. She grew up in Southeast Portland and went on to a distinguished career as a teacher and administrator at Oregon State University. As one of the few women leaders in Apano when I started, I felt drawn to her wisdom and experience. And I've always really appreciated the intergenerational nature of our churches and the connection I've been able to build with elders. And thus I made this extra effort to drive down to Corvallis to visit Phyllis and to build a relationship. And as I was dipping my toe into Apano and getting a sense of the community, I was struck by a couple of things that Phyllis said. In one of my first meetings, we were talking about upcoming legislation and ballot measures, trying to build our analysis, and Phyllis reminded us that the issues that we commit ourselves to need to not only benefit our communities, but all communities as much as possible. She grounded us in the principle that while we may be an Asian and Pacific Islander organization, the work we do needs to affirm that we have a common destiny together, and that we need to do no harm in our pursuit of social justice. I saw this in the actions that Apano worked side by side with other communities on, and not just taking on single issues of immediate opportunity and self-interest. And as I stepped into leadership, I've appreciated how we've been able to keep prioritizing long-standing partnerships and cultivating multi-year campaigns that also focus on building up a base and building up new leadership. Tammy Bang Liu, who's an organizer we work with, talks about the idea of going big or going home. That in the face of our greatest challenges, we need to have our boldest vision, and that without such vision, we will perish. For Tammy, her early organizing was about organizing for a car-free Los Angeles. Wow, what a dream. She wants to address climate change, improve public health, and invest in a more sustainable green economy. And as Apano's trusting and reciprocal relationships have grown, and we work with groups like CAUSA and the Urban League and Opal Environmental Justice Oregon, Basic Rights Oregon, and ACLU, we have been taking on bigger fights than we could ever imagine winning on our own. We've won campaigns despite many, even amongst our friends and allies, telling us that it can't be done, that it's not politically feasible. We've won campaigns for things like ethnic studies and K-12 schools, minimum wage and paid sick days. We have been able to expand the transfer time on TriMet and create a low-income fare program, healthcare access for all, including undocumented children. We created the state's most progressive reproductive health law several years ago. And the alumni and staff out of Apano have continued to do tremendous work. Now working for places like Senator Merkley's office, Governor Brown, Speaker Kotek, and running campaigns for people like Joanne Hardesty for city council. A second theme I've been thinking about is around infrastructure, and that how, you know, even though we haven't had many noticeable features in our community historically, in the last 10 years we've been able to build both organizations and places where we can really steward our cultural resources and generate more sort of wisdom and action out of our community. And that's also provided a really more positive place for our young people to thrive. At the hyper-local level, Apana was working at the intersections of 82nd and Southeast Division. There used to be an old furniture store there across from PCC Southeast Center. And there in the heart of this Jade International District, which is a community development program that Apano leads to build leadership with renters and small businesses and workers. And we bring the neighborhood together through an international night market that happens every August. So if you're here in August, go check it out. We also do placemaking projects with artists. Right there in that site of that old furniture store, we're building a new permanent home for Apano and our communities. And in a state that does have so few features, it's been a real privilege to help guide and sort of focus this new mixed-use affordable housing. There'll be 48 units of housing, along with a 5,000 square foot cultural center. And we're doing that in partnership with the Rose Community Development Corporation. And the origins of that project came out of our six-language multilingual organizing in the neighborhood over the last 5 years. And we see this as a place not only for Apano, but for the tens of thousands of folks in the neighborhood who are looking for places to come together and to connect, to enjoy a brave and dynamic space, to celebrate and mourn and organize. This new space is just the tip of the iceberg of a deeper infrastructure of organizations and coalitions and funders and electeds and government agencies that we're trying to link together to really support our communities. And while I've been inspired by our campaigns and concrete change, we've also been able to really fulfill, for me at least, a fascination of how to build a healthy organization, a strong board, a great staff, and all those operational practices and policies to sustain it all. I've shifted from a frontline organizer into more back office management, and am able to concentrate more on facilitating the strategic planning, the participatory budgeting, and the progressive human resources that we really need to sort of create a new model. And we've been able to share and to learn with other colleagues, and I'm grateful for the cross-mentoring that I've received because it helps us and Apano be a much better organization. And then lastly, I want to share just a few thoughts on organizing as a community minister. A colleague once said, you can be a chaplain to the empire or the prophet of the resistance. You have to choose your path. And as an organizer, I learned early on that if no one is angry about what you're doing, then you're not really organizing. If you're only keeping friends, then nothing is really changing. So for me, I practice a model of relational and transformative organizing, one that's grounded in my own theological mix of mysticism and liberation and Unitarian Universalism. And there are three practices as an organizer and a minister that inspire me these days. I'm considering the world as it is, and then boldly envisioning what I hope it to be. And I ask myself, well, who is most affected by the change that I desire? Even as I know change will affect and improve my life, I also know that it will often have a more profound effect on other people. And I want to do my best to listen to understand with those who are most affected, and find ways to position them to be leading, if not guiding, my efforts. I know that reducing carbon emissions, for example, to protect our health and environment is going to really benefit me and my kids. However, it's also clear to me that my neighbor, who's working two dead-end minimum wage jobs, taking TriMet with their children along a polluted and dangerous road, and who lacks the political resources to help shape and influence what's happening in the neighborhood, they're going to be more impacted by the current conditions on the ground if we make change. So how do we center those who are most affected? Second is I seek to build with people one-on-one, that relational piece, to build a sense of knowing one another, their situation, our interests and passions, and find connection. And I believe broadly in the idea of self-determination, that process by which you have the rights and resources to determine your own life. And so I'm really interested in ways that we can co-create together versus rigid and hierarchical approaches. I find that in an environment of high context, lots of information sharing, cooperation, and explicit consent works best. Being as transparent as we can about the circumstances that form the setting for what we're doing together, and then articulating our agreements and commitments to each other each step of the way are critical. And then thirdly, it's been, you know, I'm really interested in efforts to build up rather than to just purely tear down. to generate versus to destroy. I know there are situations, I think of like ICE in our military industrial complex, that, yeah, I really truly want to tear that down. But I'm also clear that these institutions were designed and created to address real concerns in the eyes of people. And to just destroy it may resolve an immediate concern, but it does not necessarily address the underlying questions. And sometimes creating a vacuum can be unintentionally more damaging. Buckminster Fuller, the Buckyball architect and inventor, said you can never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, you need to build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. And I want to invest my energy in trying to co-create beautiful solutions that provide meaningful alternatives to meet the needs of our community. So it's been an honor to share some of my first sort of post-Apanel reflections with you this morning. And it's really good to see YEAST continuing to thrive and be present here in Northeast Portland. And just to close, I'm going to share one other reading that has come up for us in Apanel as sort of another touchstone about the kind of space we're trying to create and that I hope to create when I go to the Philippines. It's by Mickey Scott Bay Jones, who's a Black doula from New York City. They write, "Together we will create a brave space because there is no such thing as a safe space. We exist in the real world. We all carry scars and we have all caused wounds. In this space, we seek to turn down the volume of the outside world. We amplify voices that fight to be heard elsewhere. We call each other to more truth and love. We have the right to start somewhere and continue to grow. We have the responsibility to examine what we think we know. We will not be perfect. This space will not be perfect. It will not always be what we wish it to be, but it will be our brave space together, and we will work on it side by side. Thank you, and blessed be."
Thank you. Is this on?
Mm-hmm.